Good evening. This is the NLA Hams Net. We're here to talk about ham radio topics and anything to do with NLA. And my name is Terry from Colorado. My call sign is KI0RE. You're welcome to look it up. We have this net every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And here in Colorado, the sun's still up. And this week, we're coming to you from the front of my storeroom where I have a chair and a box full of gas cans set up. That makes a nice little table for me. So, without further ado, we'll get into it. We've been going through the, as kind of an exercise, we've been going through the ARRL Ham Radio License Manual, third edition. It's level one technician, and it's good through June 30th next year. And we've done that so that people can learn a little bit about ham license, even if they're a long ways away and out in the boonies, they can still get something out of it. I would definitely recommend you get the book because all the questions are in the back of the book. Also, I would encourage you, if you are near a population center, that you associate yourself with a ham club, and because you'll learn a whole lot faster if you're with other hams and you get to talk about things. And with that, no further ado, we'll begin. I'm picking up on page 8-4. I think that I had something. Let's see, we talked about tactical call signs last time, so I'm going to leave that alone. I've talked about it a couple times before. But it talks about self-assigned indicators. Self-assigned indicator is FCC Part 97.119, paragraph C. It says one or more indicators may be included with a call sign. Each indicator must be separated from the call sign by a slash, slant mark, what's another word for it, stroke, portable. You'll see a lot of guys say this is KI0RE/mobile, and or they just drop the slash when they're talking because it's easier to just say mobile and everybody knows what you're talking about. Oftentimes you'll see it on different radios that you'll see a slash and then something else. Like they'll say, oh, it's /3 or /2. This is because, like the example in the book says, well, what if you have an AL7 prefix indicating you're from Alaska and you're operating down in, let's say, the zero zone where Terry is right now in Colorado? You would give your call sign in slash maybe a zero, saying that you're in the zero area. You can put /9 or some people use it to indicate what which radio they have. Maybe they have 6 radios, one in the shed, one in the house, one in the pickup truck, and one in the family car. And so they use /1, /2, /3, or /4, depending upon which car they're driving or what they're operating from. It's totally up to you. See, if an indicator is self-assigned, and this we're back to part FCC Part 97, it must be included before, after, or both before and after the call sign. So long as you put a slower stroke in there, or so you say slash, or you say portable, or something like that, you're fine. Note that the indicator is not allowed to conflict with some of the other indicators specified in the FCC rules, such as those that indicate an upgraded license. And this, what happens here is that you are a technician, let's say, and you go in and take your general. Well, you have all, once you take the test and you pass it, you have the general privileges. You can use them right away. But your call sign might be KC0BCP, and that's a technician call sign. And it's a 2x3 call sign, so they know it's not, it doesn't have general characteristics. So what, or maybe you've got a different call sign. Well, anyway, you can use your new privileges. You just have to append a slash AG on the end, which is technician to general. So I would be KC0BCP /AlphaGolf or AG, however you want to say it. In code, it's really fast. And a slash You can tell a slash and code anytime. It's da-da-da-da-da. And it's real easy to pick up. So if some others are novice to technician, you just got your technician's license, then you can say slash KT. Technician to general, AG, we talked about that. Or general or advanced to extra, you just add a slash AE, which stands for amateur extra. Really nice. So you don't hear it very often because the only time you will hear it is when somebody just got their new upgraded privileges. They're waiting on the FCC to acknowledge them or give them a new call sign, and they're talking on a band that their privileges would not normally allow them to do it. So I leave it up to the student to figure out when that would be. Also, there's a little blue box on licensee or trustee. If you own the radio and you're talking on it and you're right there by the radio, you're a licensee. If you own the radio, but it's not where you are, but you're at the control point, you're a trustee, you're a licensee. It's a repeater or remote base is operating under the auspices and using a call sign on individual amateur radio station call license, then the operator is a licensee, not the trustee. If it is operating under the auspices of an FCC-issued club station license, and using the FCC-issued club call sign. Oh, and there's the negative side up here. We have cars that go by. Sorry about that. Then it's a trustee. So W0DK, Whiskey Zero, Delta Kilo, is the call sign for the BARC repeater club, or the BARC club, the Boulder Amateur Radio Club, which you put all the acronyms together, and it's BARC. So they use that, and they have a trustee that handles that. I was that trustee for a short time to fill in between two trustees that couldn't cover each other. But the trustee is responsible for how that repeater is run and what it does, and the trustee is responsible to make sure that the repeater is within FCC specs at all times. And then it talks about guest operators and how you can use both call signs. They talk about a person who is using a radio by one person, and first person is who wants to use the radio has higher privileges than the person who's using the radio. Then you put both call signs in there, and you're allowed, and put a slash between them. You don't see that a whole lot because most people, well, the way they found out how to get to where that guy's house is they talked him in on the radio, and they don't care. They got their radio out in the car. They can go use it any time. Miscellaneous identification rules on page 8-6. There are two exceptions to the identification rules, remote control signals and signals retransmitted through space stations. If you're controlling a model aircraft, for example, you don't have to send your call sign. Everybody knows where that is, and the RC people, remote control people, boats, planes, whatever, cars, they use little colored ribbons so that people can deconflict themselves and be on a certain frequency so they don't have two boats or a boat and a car or a car and an airplane or whatever the combination is, so they don't run one into the ground. Or hit a concrete wall or whatever. So they deconflict themselves, and nobody puts their call sign. And besides, you're using the radio signal to control an airplane, and it's talking to servos. It's all digital, and there's no way to really turn it to an audible call sign. The other one is the space station. The space station, it's located more than 50 kilometers above the Earth's surface. Such as amateur satellites and stations on the International Space Station, they do not have to identify themselves, although the station on the ISS uses the call sign NA1SS, November Alpha 1SS, that's the North American call sign, and RU0SS, which is Romeo Uniform Zero Sierra Sierra. Amateur satellite transponders, that's the Russian side. Amateur satellite transponders that receive an entire range of received frequencies and retransmit them on a different band are not required to transmit their call sign either. So we know the satellites are up there. We know you're using it. At the time you're using it, we know where that satellite is, and we can figure out which satellite you're using, and we know what frequencies. And so it's really a moot point. So do you have to use your call sign when you're talking on a satellite? Absolutely. So make sure you give your call sign. Test transmissions. People are all the time trying to see if they can. I wonder if I can reach that repeater from way out here. And so they push the button and see if the repeater goes, boop, 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 you know, and you get a courtesy beep and everything like that. And sure enough, you can. Well, what did I do wrong? Even on short transmissions like that, if I could chunk the repeater just to see if I can get it, I should say KI0RE testing. Or I just should say, and this is what I do. So for all of you, this is an operating principle that you might look into trying. All I want to do is say, hey, I'm here on the band listing if anybody wants to talk. And so when I test the repeater, I say KI0RE, listening, and I release it. If I get back a squelch tell at the repeater or a courtesy beep or the repeater identifying itself, then I know I hit that repeater. And I don't have to make another transmission to tell them what my call sign is and why I'm trying to hit the repeater. I've done it all on one thing, KI0RE, listening and released. To go the other way, and if I don't get anything back from the repeater, I know I didn't hit it. I haven't violated anything. I've already given my call sign. And then I'm listening on the input frequency to the repeater. Anybody wants to talk to me, they can. So very effective. Automatic identification. It talks there about the repeaters and beacons and other things that are controlled. If you have a computer-controlled anything on the air that's transmitting, you need to put something in there that talks or that can do Morse code. Or that can do some way. I mean, if it's a repeater and all it does is like a digipeater only puts out digits. Well, it's kind of dumb to identify it with a voice, so you just put it in there and you identify it. So anybody listening to a digipeater can say, oh, that's the digipeter talking. So you've got to have the computer identify itself on the radio. Following the same rule. What's the rule about identification, Jan? Okay, he's away, or he's got himself muted. It's every 10 and at the end, every 10 minutes and at the end. And then we have special event stations. Yeah, they have to identify themselves also. And sometimes they get a one-by-one call sign. I talked about that a little bit, W0W. Whenever we started Bark Juniors every year, which has gone away because, unfortunately, the people who were leading it couldn't do it anymore. Interference is caused by noise and signals. The noise is called QRN. That's another Q code. Quebec, Romeo, November. And signals are caused by, they're just signals. It might be some frequency somewhere else. And that's called QRM, Quebec Romeo Mike. Let's see, QRN, signals unintentionally radiated by appliances, industrial equipment, computing equipment, whatever it is. And I've told the story here before that my son got a Sony whatever station. It was a PlayStation. That's what it was. And the first time I keyed up on HF, the thing rebooted, and he came and talked to me. So I managed to move it over and block it a little bit more, put some other stuff around it, and change my power setting on that particular frequency, And then we didn't have any more problems. But it does happen. So in that case, it was me interfering with him. Well, I don't want that to happen either. But if sometimes appliances, especially older appliances, when you turn them on or they turn off, the refrigerator can be giving you noise. You need to go sleuthing to find out what the issue is and what the appliance is causing you a problem. And it's a lot of fun. It can be fun if you look real hard. Then talks about signals. You know, it's part of the price of frequency flexibility. The ham radio has a certain set of frequencies that they can, transmit on, and they can use any frequency they want, any discrete frequency they want that's inside the band. But what comes with that is that maybe you're too close to this other thing, and you find out who it is. If hams operated on assigned and evenly spaced channels, there would be much less interference. The channels would also be frequently overloaded. Interference is not necessarily illegal, just inconvenient. Most interference is manageable. Hams have learned various ways of dealing with QRM, starting with the following, and these are excellent suggestions. Common sense and courtesy help avoid many problems. If you're on a frequency, it's real close to this repeater that you're using, and it's real close to the frequency of the repeater. Maybe you don't want to key up on that frequency next to that repeater. If you have somebody just, within 10 feet of you choosing a different frequency, maybe you want to be courteous and transmit when he's not talking. Be sure to equip your radio with good filters to reject interference, i.e. band pass, band stop, different types of filters. So that if you do have a problem and you can't really change it because the guy next door is always transmitting on this or always listening on that frequency, maybe you put a bandpass filter on you and you just don't use that frequency because it gets shorted out the ground when you try and go there. Remember that no one owns a frequency. Be flexible and plan ahead. You can't just take over a frequency because you want to. Somebody else might be using it. So act accordingly. Be nice. Be aware of other activities such as special events, de-expeditions, and contests. I don't know how many times we've had to reemphasize that the door has fallen down a little bit. I need to push it back up. Stand by just a second, and I'll mute so you don't have to listen to it. My gosh, what a noise. And we would go kind of quiet for a while. There wasn't a whole lot of traffic, and we kind of wondered about that. And it's no big deal to not have any traffic, but sometimes you'll get on, you'll be listening and running an event, and you're using the entire bandwidth of the repeater right there, right now. And you just had a lull in traffic that you've been passing. And somebody gets on and said, and they listen, and they hear the same empty space you do, and they say, they make the assumption, which is a perfectly logical assumption, that, oh, there's nobody on the repeater. I can use it. Hey, Joe, you out there? This is KI0RE. And then that control goes very politely. The net is being used by blah, blah, blah. So if you want to make contact, go ahead, and then please move off to a different frequency. And I've heard Joe come back, and they move off to a completely different frequency, and everybody's happy. So that's the way it's supposed to work. Please pay attention. All right. What else we got left? How are we doing on time? Let's see.
Got 19 after.
19 after, somehow my clock got changed. It's saying it's 8 o'clock. It's not 8 o'clock. Oh, that's the length of the time. Okay. I was looking at the wrong digit because I was holding the phone upside down. You must have strange pictures of how I run these nets.
You're right.
So I'm at my beautiful storeroom in beautiful downtown Dakota. And I guess it's in the suburbs because it's downtown Dakota is about a mile away. And if there's 150 people in Dakota, I'd be surprised. But anyway, it's way out here on the plains of Colorado. Okay, if a transmission seriously degrades, obstructs, or repeatedly interrupts communications of regulated service, that's considered harmful interference. And you can go after that and try and find a solution. Be nice. The overall arcing thing is be nice. Talk to them about it. Reports of interference such as transmitting off frequency or generating spurious signals, splatter, which is transmitting off frequency, and buckshot should be checked out. And I want you to know that, especially on CB, I've been out and chased a guy down because he had a dead key. It was transmitting all the time. And I got up to him and he says, "You got a dead key going." So a guy working on his car out front. He says, "No, I don't." And I said, "Yeah." He says, "Look, I'm on channel 19. And I said, "Yeah, but that's got a screw on it, and you got it screwed in the wrong place." And I said, "Turn it off." And I said, "Yep, that was it." He wasn't very happy with me. What should you do if you have harmful interference occurs to your contact? Assuming the interfering station wasn't intentionally trying to cause interference, can you change frequency a little bit or change antenna direction? One of the things somebody, I'll go on. Common courtesy should prevail, but remember that no one has an absolute right to any frequency. Be flexible. It's one of ham radio's greatest strengths. What should you do when you cause harmful interference? If it's your fault, apologize, identify yourself, and take the necessary steps to reduce the interference. Change frequency, reduce power, or move your antenna. And what I started to say was that sometimes when you can't get through because you hear this other station real close to you, you up your power. Well, what does that do? Well, he's probably having the same interference, and if he didn't, now that your signal is stronger, he starts having the interference. And so you're interfering with each other, and neither one of you gets decent communications. Take a step back. Take a deep breath. Count to 10. Whatever it takes. And then take the time to proceed forward in a nice, courteous manner. Harmful interference is prohibited in some circumstances, described in the FCC's rules on frequency sharing requirements, Part 97303, it says. For example, amateurs are not allowed to create interference that endangers the functions of radio navigation services, even accidentally. So we kind of talked about don't be too sensitive. There's a big blue box, and I would recommend people read it. And it talks about using a noise blanker, it's a frequent source of problems. Most noise blankers operate by sensing short, sharp noise pulses. They look at the entire band, not just what is coming through a narrow signal filters. A strong nearby signal can confuse a noise blanker to the point of nearly shutting down the receiver. I have two ICOM W32As, and if I'm within 50 feet of another radio, even a handheld, that thing is desensitized, and I can't hear what people are saying. But more than about 30 to 50 feet, and I can hear them perfectly. It works great. So just realize that happened. An RF attenuator. Some of them, it can be your biggest friend when dealing with strong nearby signals. It's surprisingly easy for a strong signal to overload a receiver. You've got these receivers nowadays. They're amplifying thousands of times. Back in the beginning of radio, it was tough just to get, you had to use headphones because that's all the power you had. You could drive a set of headphones. You couldn't even use speakers and listen to it without the hassle of having headphones on. And those headphones were made of Bakelite lots of times. And after about 10 minutes, your ears started to sweat. and your head got pinched because you've had this ear headphones that are sitting against your ears. So one of the things that they did, somebody finally invented the Super Heterodyne receiver. And what that does is it boosts, it takes everything down to an IF, and then it boosts the signal 2, 3, 4 times. So it runs a transistor to boost the signal, and then that transistor's output runs into the next transistor, or at the time it was tubes, and you'd have a three or four stage amplification. Well, this made all the difference in the world. Now you could separate the signals. But you can still, because you have these tiny little circuits that are listening for these tiny little millivolts of RF energy that are modulated as a particular in a particular way, you have to go and attenuate the signal. And sometimes you can turn that down. And one of the things you find out, overload causes the receiver to create spurious signals and noise up and down the band. Switching on the attenuator cures a surprising number of ailments because your receiver is no longer being overloaded. Remember that the goal is to maximize understandability. So if somebody is close and they're overdriving your receiver, like I was talking my ICOM, that it would just, I couldn't hear the person. Lots of times you can attenuate. Take your antenna off. Don't transmit like that, but take your antenna off and you might be able to hear what they're saying. Attenuate your signal. You can buy these little attenuators, especially at Aero Antenna, and that's one I know of. And you can put in 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 dB of attenuation, and it makes that signal perfectly understandable. Then it talks about the RF gain control. It can make your receiver very sensitive, but also susceptible to overloading. Experiment with reducing RF gain to see if it improves your receiver's performance on a busy band. Even during casual operating, turning down the RF gain can dramatically reduce background noise. And that's a nice thing. Anybody who's listened to HF before, even when there's somebody talking, you don't get that nice, crisp, full quieting that you do in FM broadcasts on VHF and UHF. You get static all the time, and you hear the person back in the static. Well, if they're powerful enough, you can turn your RF gain down a little bit, and you'll be amazed. The static isn't nearly as strong. So what you're doing is that RF gain control acts like an attenuator for the static. And you can turn that down and listen to them all day long, and it sounds great. So something to think about. Does your receiver have passband tuning, IF shift, variable bandwidth, and similar controls? All those new digital signal processor, DSP, features you paid for can also clean up noise and attenuate low-frequency or high-frequency audio. Read the manual. Figure out. You need to get used to your radio and practice. You know, you can be practicing listening to different radio stations on different frequencies and different modes and be fiddling with all of this stuff so that you can see how to get the best signal. And once you get it set up like that, on some radios, you can actually tell it, memorize that. I want to go back to that every time I get in this band. And it'll do it. So read your radio, get to know your radio, get to know what's happening on your radio, and you'll appreciate it. You'll be able to better, more efficiently use that radio. Willful interference. Willful interference is never allowed. That's all you need to know. Interference doesn't have to be aimed at one specific contact or group. Anytime communications are deliberately disrupted, that's willful. Willful interference. My tongue got tangled. One of the things that I want you to know is you start doing that, there are people that will pull out their directional antennas, and I got mine in my room at home, and they'll start getting a point. And remember that club I talked about? Well, Joe lives on the south side of town, Fred lives on the north, Tom lives on the west, and Mary lives on the east. And they heard this interference, and they all take a bearing. Guess what? They plot that bearing, and they know pretty quick who's doing it. And if they can't identify it specifically, they'll go there, and the next time the interference is going on, they're within a block of where the interference is coming from. It's pretty easy to get it down to the person, the house. Third-party communications. There's a whole bunch here on third-party communications. Just realize that you can't abdicate your license requirements, your FCC requirements, and third parties. Now let's define third parties. One ham talks to another ham. One ham is the first party. The other ham is the second party. So anybody that comes along that doesn't have a ham license is a third party. Well, everything all right? That third-party communications, you need to watch out. You can't let the third party control your radio. And if the third party says, I don't like you, blah, 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 you got to cut out the blahs. You got to be able to still have control of that radio enough to where you can turn it off so the blah, blah, blah doesn't go out on the air. You are still responsible, even if you're letting a third party talk. You are still responsible for what goes out over the air over your radio. Now, another thing is that the third party might not be there. It may be that somebody down the street heard that you're a ham radio and you could talk long distances, and they come over to your house and they say, my friend is, he was out in the hurricane, and I haven't been able to get a hold of him. He hasn't called me. So I'd like to get a message to him and see that he's all right and send him my phone number. So, okay, write down the message. And then you might pass that traffic, and that traffic might get passed. There's a whole networking system of network traffic system, NTS. We talked about it on another one of these conference calls that can go all the way across the United States and several ham sites. That's third-party traffic that ham radio is carrying. Oh, and they talk about not to be allowed to use the bands we want. They wanted to ensure that ham radio doesn't carry so much third-party traffic that it gets out of whack and is eclipsing commercial methods of doing that. It's not as bad as it used to be. Well, be aware of that. That's why you only have a limit of how many characters you can send in a message and things like that there. I'm going to go pass over that one. It talks about table 8.1 on page 8-10, third-party agreements. And this is something you got to think about because if you're talking to another ham in another country, you cannot pass third-party information. That might be spies or something, and they don't want that to happen. They don't want to even come close. So there are only certain countries listed in Table 8.1 that have third-party agreements with the United States. Those people you can pass third-party traffic to. Other countries you can't. There's an accurate list that gets updated on a regular basis up the ARRL.org website, and I would check there before you intend to go do something like that. Okay, how we doing? Let's see, on time. Turn it around right side up, and maybe I can read it. I got about 10 minutes. Let's see if I can nail one more page here. 8.5, remote and automatic operation. Many stations, such as repeaters and beacons, operate without a human control operator, and that's what we're talking about here. But there's also ones that use the Internet. Local control, a control operator is physically present at the control point. The control point is where I can control the radio and the transmissions on that radio. I either have control of the mic for transmitting, the button that you pushed for press the test, or I have access to the power for that radio. And I just one little movement of my finger and the whole radio goes off. I can ensure, because I have local control. Remote operation, the control point is located away from the transmitter, but a control operator is present at the control point. The control point might be many of the repeaters have a different frequency that they use to talk to the repeater. So they can go to the repeater and push buttons and control the repeater from that going over a different frequency. Or maybe they have a hard line. Different things are possible. Many stations operate under remote control over an internet link. And we talked about this a little bit before. There's people now that have a repeater and they hook the repeater to the internet. Well, the internet is great and it packetizes that. And it can go anywhere in the world, like I was talking about before. You can go back and listen to that. And that we routinely get somebody here in Boulder that links one of the Boulder repeaters to Australia. And they've got a friend down there they talk to on a regular basis. Any station can be remotely controlled. And then there's automatic operation. Automatic operation says that it's completely under control of devices and procedures like a computer that ensure compliance to FCC rules. A control operator is still required but need not be at the control point when the station is transmitting. Repeaters, beacons, and space stations are allowed to be automatically controlled. Digipeaters that relay messages such as the APRS network are also automatically controlled. Responsibilities. I'm on page 8-11 now. No matter what type of control is asserted, local, remote, or automatic, the station must operate in compliance with the FCC rules at all times. No excuses, and they don't tolerate excuses. Automatic stations might not have a control operator controlling the station at all times, but a control operator must be responsible for the station's operation. Repeater owners must install the necessary equipment and procedures for automatic control that ensures the repeater operates in compliance with the FCC rules. If automatic control results in a rule violation, the FCC can require a repeater to be placed on remote control, meaning that a control operator must be present when the repeater is operating. And nobody wants to do that. It's a bummer. Because digital protocols are designed to operate automatically, there are special rules for automatic control when using them. Stations using a data mode, including RATI, RTTY, may operate under automatic control in certain segments of the HF bands and above 50 megahertz, as listed in Part 97.221, paragraph B. Data stations are the only type of automatically controlled station allowed to forward third-party communications. Note that this is okay to pass third-party messages using a repeater. Okay. What time we got here?
38 after right now.
Okay. Let's see. Could I get all that? I probably won't get all that. I think that's a good place to stop. I'm going to wrap it up because I'm losing my light. And I don't have any. And I think I'm going to finish putting the stuff I need to put in the storeroom, here in Decono, Colorado. Look it up. And I'm out on the southwest side of town at my storeroom place. It's been good talking to everybody. Does anybody have any comments, questions, suggestions, or criticisms? Please call now.
No criticisms, just thank you very much for another great performance.
Yeah, she did it again. Came up with all this
she
stuff.
She pulled it off.
And just kept talking. And yep. I hope it proves helpful to somebody in the future. Mm-hmm. This is Terry in Colorado, KI0RE, if you want to look it up. This is the NLA Hams Net, and we've been talking about things NLA-ish or Hamish or both. And this net is held every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Compute your time from that. And we enjoy talking to anybody. Anybody is welcome to join the net at any time. Just jump on and start talking, and I will turn the time over to you and answer your questions, or I'll accept your suggestions and criticisms, anything else you want to say. So with that, we're going to close the net, and we'll say goodbye, and I'll see you next week. Thank you.